Ingram, he was one of the early ones. He was like second. So he has some really good perspectives. Jim was in the middle group, and then Sarah was the, Sarah White from Clemson. She was the panel manager last year. So they're going to come up. They're going to sit here at this table. And Dwayne's got a herniated disc, so he may have to stand up and move around and stuff like that. So Dwayne's almost as old as I am. So that's kind of what happens to you, you know. So they're gonna share their perspectives, and we'll go from most senior to least senior, and then they'll give their perspectives, and then we're gonna throw it open for questions. So as they're talking, think critically. You know, think some questions. All right.
Well, it's hard to cover between Tom and Megan. They said a lot of what I would say relative to a panel manager, but I'll try to highlight a few of those things and maybe add a few additional ones. The bottom line is you have to have a good idea, and if you don't have a good idea, it comes through so good, you know, so plainly to the reviewers, and they don't spend much time with it. So make sure that you have got a team together to what the idea is crystal clear in your mind, and if there is a need for to solve a problem or to address an opportunity. If you don't have the good idea, nothing else matters. And you need to establish the importance of that for the science, for the crop, as well as for the industry. So hitting all three of those, I think, is important. industry letter or letters is critical. and it needs to be regional or national or international in scope. That needs to be identified. If that particular industry person has not been involved in establishing the the criteria or establishing the objectives of the proposal, it will come through in the letter. So it's good to have someone who has been involved in setting the priorities of this proposal to write that letter, or someone that you have really helped educate. Or somebody else that did that, an industry representative, to help educate the person writing. Maybe they couldn't participate in that group, but they could at least speak to the objectives. make this seed to consumer from the whole system. At least define that whole system, even though you may be working on a portion of it. But most of our projects are large enough that we need to think about the end result and how it's going to be used even by the consumer, which means economic impact, environmental impact, social acceptance, as well as impact on my science are key factors. We started this time, nobody knew what transdisciplinary teams were, but we all knew what systems approach was. So it was not a big step to go the next level, but just make the system more inclusive. So transdisciplinary really is that. It is, if there are silos, even in the early days, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and hopefully at the end we're going to make it work. It comes across very plainly to reviewers. It'd be great. Well, you have to make sure you have the expertise on the panel that you're, I mean, on the team that will address the whole issue. And the outreach shouldn't be a tack on at the end. It should begin from the beginning. Make sure you're right to the evaluation. And it should be really clear and understood that surely there wouldn't be a lot of typos or grammar issues or anything in your proposal. It should go without saying, but that's not true. It doesn't take a reviewer very long to get the idea that this person didn't spend a lot of time with this. Did they have anybody else review it? You know, so automatically you're down on their second tier. And there's not many that make it to the first tier. So if you have one or two reviewers that get you on the second tier, you're done. of course, that Gantt chart is really good in terms of trying to show a system and how individual pieces fit into that system. Most of the reviewers are not going to look at the details of your budget unless the description of your budget and the justification of your budget leads them to want to go back and look at those. So make sure that, you know, they're either saying, they can't do all this for this much money, or they got this much money and they're only going to do this. Then they go back to the details of the budget to say, where are they spending their money? Where do you propose spending the money? Pitfalls and limitations. You have to include that section, but it is a double-edged sword. They'll say in it is that I thought I made a mistake once, but I really didn't make a mistake. So that's not the way to approach it. But if you apply a pitfall, provide a solution. You know, if I'm going to hit that pitfall, it could be, you know, what pitfall is that the data from the first stage of this may not be the answer that we were looking, that we expected. And so we, after year one, we will look at, okay, where we are now and how we can make adjustments to the next step. So no pitfalls without a solution. And I'll stop there.
Hello. So I was one of the mid-career guys. It seems like a billion years ago. And when we started out, I felt like we were making the rules, Dwayne. I know back in the old days. And they must have been good rules because a lot of them seem to still be the same. I'm interested in hearing from Sarah if we got the same tips. I do feel we've had one of these before, and I do feel like we're saying the same thing in a lot of cases to the same people. So I'm just going to say everything you've heard so far is exactly right, and I'll try to pick two or three or four things that I think are also important. First of all, I mean, it's the stakeholder thing's really important. I come from a stakeholder background, and I couldn't agree more that you've got to get all that stuff right up front. There's got to be genuine involvement in the concept, in the project write-up, and in the sustainability of the project for you to have any validity and validation from the industry. You know, I honestly think that's not so hard to do, but you've got to start a long time beforehand. It's not enough in June or July, like Tom says, you get up and you got a great idea. I'm going to call two or three of the growers I'm working with, and they're going to love me in this project. That does shine through, but that's kind of easy. It's real straightforward. To me, having the good idea, I mean, what's a good idea? Is the hard part, and that's on researchers to come up with that good idea that's inclusive, that is clearly not a siloed effort. I think that's one thing that has evolved in, as I see the proposals coming through. In the old days, there was a lot of us old guys that just, we got used to working independently, and we'd get together, three or four of us was too many. If you had five or six, you couldn't agree on anything. And I sense that the early career scientists now out there really do have an advantage in that you're more inclined to work together. I don't know, Sarah, that may or may not be the case, but I'm really impressed with the next generation of horticulturalists that have a much broader sense. And maybe the SCRI has something to do with that, but I think it also is a predisposition. So take advantage of that and think really hard about integrating within research, but also, I'm also a big extension fan. Don't tag extension on at the end. I said it yesterday. I'll keep saying it again and again. You know, you come down to objective five and it's, we'll pursue extension activities, including project website, regular use of social media, and innovative blah, 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 blah. And it's clear that extension has not been worked into the listening part beforehand, the project adjustment, and then dissemination activities with validation of those activities, not just toting up numbers at meetings and the demographics of the crowd, but a genuine commitment to extension activities in its classic sense. Same thing for transdisciplinary. I think a lot of times we make too much of it, like it's really hard, but it's hard to talk to engineers still for me. But social science is kind of fun because it is a different language and framework, and it really helps. And to me, it makes the logic model logical. I never got the reading from right to left, but it did make sense to put structure. It helps you think through way back, is it a good idea? It's a good idea if you can actually follow that logic model all the way through, and it gives your panelists a kind of a roadmap on where you're going to go. It also gives you as a PD or a PI a real good sense of things. So the project design, review, and execution have industry validation, but a lot of that, frankly, it's on the research team with your extension and transdisciplinary components. No one said it yet, but don't use form letters. I mean, you've been on panels. When you get those things and everyone says the same darn thing and you got a little insertion, it doesn't appeal to the panel. Narrative integrity and flow. Are there still applications that come in without page numbers? How does that happen? That's the first, piss off a reviewer. That's the easiest thing to do. I mean, you get Megan angry right off the bat, but if you get it to the panel level and you don't have the page numbers on it, things like misspellings, you know, and then take it to the next level. There's a lot more graphics capability right now. Utilize them. You don't overload it, but it's a relief often to get to a sidebar where the team has actually thought about embellishing a point, expanding a point, but not doing it with a bunch of narrative, doing it with a graphic. Make them real easy to follow. As people are stuck in a room, has the air conditioning improved in the room? Yeah. So the actual situation that the panel is in is important. They're sometimes a bit irritable, sometimes a bit, I've got other things to do, checking emails, that kind of thing. But it is really important to recognize that it's not Olympus and there's not these, gods that are making decisions. It's your colleagues. And if you don't set them up to, at least you said have an enjoyable experience, that's lofty and aspirational. But at least you don't want to irritate people. You don't want to get set up to have a bad experience. Just like Dwayne said, many of you know, you're that far away from, the further you fall, no chance you got. So why do it on the stuff that you control? You control the application as it comes in. You know what the timelines are, deadlines, et cetera. Get a project manager, get him or her to kick you in the butt, make sure you hit deadlines, get your contract office to make everything really easy. That may not show up at the panel level, but if you do get the award, it sure does you a lot of good as a project manager, as a project director, to have management that's already in place. I emphasize that the pre-award activities, all the stuff that Megan talked about is necessary but not sufficient. That just gets you in the ball game. Then you're playing off what the good idea is, the strength of your team, the forcefulness of your argument, the fluidity of your narrative, its integrity as you put everything together in a real subsystem approach. So yeah, fill out the forms, hit the deadlines, but that's not enough. It's gotta be increasingly competitive now. I don't know what the acceptance rates are at the present time, but it's one of in the good old days we had a little bit. You had more margin for error, and now I don't think there's. Yeah, and we've always been complaining that a lot of these highly ranked proposals ought to be funded, just one or two objectives, one little things, and it's heartbreaking sometimes when you're on the panel and you see these things go down, and they were just so darn good, but there's other stuff that's more important, it ranks higher in relevance, and doesn't quite get it on the science side. I think probably the final thing I would say is that there are panel dynamics in addition to the physical. There are parapsychological things that are happening. And sometimes the best thing a project a director and team can do is, I think, sometimes prayer. How else do you explain some of these decisions? I've been on both sides of it, and, you get that review back, and you bend over backwards, and sometimes it's not going to happen. And that's where the perseverance and tenacity comes in. The second submission, a third submission, okay, suck it up. Try another time. And at some point, you got to give up. But in many cases, it's clear to the panel that the team, like you're saying, has made a substantial effort to improve the project. And guess what? If you pay attention to what the panel says, you're likely to make the current panel a lot less angry about things. When you get a response to reviewers that basically says, guess no one understands what I'm trying to do here, that doesn't always work. But be humble and realize that there are a lot of terrific teams out there. We as a community have gotten a lot better at the SCRI. And while that's a good thing for the folks in D.C., it does make our job a lot harder. Dollars don't go as far as they used to. 10, 15 years ago, a couple of grad students weren't that expensive. And nowadays, the bigger the projects get, you end up as a co-PI with $125,000. And that doesn't go very far. So really trying to put that budget together, don't just assemble a team because, hey, if we get someone from Kentucky, that'll really work. You get the right people. You really have an opportunity at the budget level, but I think this is part of the problem. And one thing that I've consistently worked with stakeholder groups to advocate is even that $100 million, $120 million it's really not enough. But the prospects for increased funding, whatever version of the Farm Bill comes along, are not great. So we're just going to have to live with it for a while and really be grateful that we have this opportunity that we didn't have 10, 15 years ago. And that's pretty much what I've got to say. Thanks for your attention.
So everything that they've said is completely accurate, and you're going to hear various iterations of this from me. What I want to stress is the stakeholder relevant statement and how you write that stakeholder relevant statement is just as important as how you write that full app, period. Because that stakeholder relevant statement is very important when we come to the final rankings of the proposal and who gets funded. So if you write a full proposal, and your relevance is the lowest, you're not going to get funded. So it's really, really important to make sure that you give as much credence to that industry perspective and buy-in as you do to your scientific relevance. If you don't, you're sunk. Have a well-stated idea without the use of jargon. If you introduce 20 abbreviations on the first page, you're going to piss off your reviewers because nobody wants to remember 20 abbreviations. And just so that you know about the review panel, chances are anyone who is within your discipline and knows your discipline has been conflicted out and is likely not reviewing your proposal, unless you're lucky and there's one person. So make sure that you're not assuming that there's going to be somebody who actually knows what you do reviewing your proposal. So make it as applicable and easy to understand as possible. I'm not a geneticist. When I actually get to see a proposal that actually explains the terminology, I'm like, hallelujah, because I don't understand. So just be very, very clear in your terminology and why it matters, why it's significant. If you don't do that and if you don't sell it within the first two pages, you're probably not going to make it through the rest of the proposal very well. Document the economic impact. And if it's a small crop, that's okay, but tell why that small crop is important. If you don't say why this matters and sell it, again, you're selling your idea. Sell your idea well. And this was already mentioned, don't let your stakeholder support letters be all form letters. I mean, if you want to provide them with seven or eight different form letters, that's great, but just make sure that they are not all the same. Proofread your proposals. Typos and poor grammar just, again, piss reviewers off because these people were taking the time to review these proposals on top of their other job, and it's really important to make it as easy and pleasurable experience as possible because these things are very dense, and they're not reading one. They're reading usually 15 or 16. Truly integrate your team. If you have six different disciplines, integrate your language as much as possible so that that it's very easy and apparent that you're integrated and you're working together. If you don't do that, again, it's that disparate, very patchy other things where it's obvious that you didn't take as much time as perhaps would have been very good and then yeah, try again next year. Don't have a discipline as an afterthought. Don't discount or ignore reviewer comments. Because if you discount it again or say, they just didn't understand what I wanted to do, if we didn't understand what you wanted to do, that means you didn't write it well enough that we could understand what you wanted to do. And if you do that, it comes off as arrogant. And again, something else that makes reviewers not like your proposal. So just be aware. Let's see. Show who does what and how these people integrate their stuff together. It's very important to show how everything works together to achieve that common goal. Again, don't make extension an afterthought. Don't make your economics an afterthought. Don't make your sociologist an afterthought. They need to be integrated within your team. Don't make your year two through year four or year five objectives all hinge on the success of your first objective. Because what happens if you fail in the first objective and we've wasted $4 million? And reviewers will catch that. And then statements regarding continuation are important, especially for large cap proposals. If you had a previous proposal and you're suggesting a continuation project, tell us what you did, why it was successful, why we should trust you with more money. Because, again, we're making hard decisions and we're reviewing potentially 100 proposals at the panel. So you've got to make yours stand out. Don't do the same old extension section. How will you make your project outputs, or how will you get your project outputs actually to your stakeholders and ensure that it actually matters? Put some thought into that extension section because these are integrated proposals with research and extension, and they need to be integrated. If you tell me that I'm going to write publications, I'm going to hold a workshop, and I'm going to do Y, a very similar thing, we're going to be like, great, but everybody does that. Why should we trust you and why is what you're doing going to actually be more effective? If it's the same old, because that's what your stakeholders like and how that's how they get their information, great. But tell us that. And dear God, make the proposal easy to read. Just because you can fill the page up to 1-inch margins with black text doesn't mean that's what you should do. Use white space. It is your friend. Again, use figures, use graphics, because those actually counts so much more than the written word because it conveys your ideas much more effectively. And if you can do that and do that well, yes, we will love you for that on your panel well. And I think that's about all that I have because they've said so much.
Great. Thank you very much.
I used to do that when I taught. I love it. Yes. Will you submit first so you got a high mark for the proposal? This piece of me, because originally do remark. What that means?
Who wants to take that?
It means you got a different panel that had different expertise and they concentrated on a different area in your proposal. So this is where you may not have had a strong economist review in it before, and you had a strong economist review it the second time. So that disciplines which the panelists or the reviewers actually know, those are the ones who are going to provide comment on the section that they do know. And sometimes that is considered, you know, fatal flaws.
It's like biology. It's not an exact science on the panel. But generally speaking, the reviewers and the panelists are genuine, investing time, want to be fair, are above and beyond what would be required of them to make sure they get it right. And listen to each other in those panels. So
I would just say, you know, from an administrative standpoint, we try to have about 25% of the panel from 1 year to the next. So there is some continuity from among the panels, but they are different. Every panel is different. And even though the same person might have reviewed your application twice, they may have different ideas or they may have learned different things. So it does change from year to year. If you're talking about the relevance review portion, I've seen projects where 1 year they got ranked number one in a panel and they assumed that because they were number one for relevance, they would get funded. and so they didn't do a good job on scientific merit. They came back the next year with the exact same stakeholder relevance statement, and they didn't get invited to submit a full application. So it's a different process every year. There's, you know, you need to hit all the marks that these guys are talking about every year. So a question over here. Well, you know, you need to explain that in the application. That, you know, it's not sufficient to say, well, I'm from Hawaii, and so we're unique, and, you know, I can't collaborate because it's 6,000 miles to my, you know, the closest other scientist. You need to explain, you know, why is that crop important to the people that you serve? And make sure that that the panel, and maybe, you know, maybe the amount of money you're asking for to do to complete the project is more than the annual value of the crop, but what is going to be the long-term benefit of improving the production of that crop? What's it going to mean for the health of the people, you know, that you serve? And so you just need to explain that. And, you know, we have a philosophy in SCRI that we're scale neutral. It's, you know, just because grapes are, you know, the sixth most important crop in all of, you know, crop agriculture, doesn't mean that they get more funded than ohelo. Okay, so it's the size of the crop is not the determining factor, and we will actually instruct reviewers to disregard that if they're making too big of a point of that.
Relatively low taxonomic value or low geographic distribution, but they've been funded because they're really good. You know, no one said it yet, and maybe all of you have already done this, but get on a panel. That's probably the best way on the job training to see what all we've talked about happens in real time. Now, I know that the administration in our era, it was really clear that Tom and everyone else, it didn't matter if it came from a valley, California, or it's a crop to hear, how that's not fashionable anymore. That's just not the way I think the results are. So to say that SCRI doesn't fund us, we're a minor crop out on the corner of the world, I don't think that the facts bear that out.
I might also say that regarding how do you become a panelist, you submit your name to Tom or Megan, and the panel manager
would be very thankful
to see a name on the list of what their expertise is, because we come with our but we also lean on that beginning list. Of course, we know a lot of people in our subject area, so we add to that. But if you ask, you might get on the panel.
Are the panels going to be in person or via conference call?
Right now they're in person and are continuing to be in person, but I heard rumors.
Well, actually, back in the dark ages when I did it, we had a couple of call-ins of someone that we did not have the expertise on the panel to address, but we had that individual who was stellar in that particular subject matter to review it, and then after the panel discussed it, then we called in this person, expert witness, so to speak, to talk about from their perspective what that would be. And then there were some dynamics. Yeah, the dynamics are not as good when they're on the phone, but still it was helpful. So, but mostly it's face-to-face.
I will say the default now for NIFA is to have virtual panels. So you have to be able to justify having an on-site panel as we move into the future. There's a lot of reasons for that. One of the main reasons is we don't have the staff to take care of the logistics. What you have to remember is SCRI is one program. We have, I don't know, hundreds of panels. And if every panel's got 20 reviewers, we have literally thousands of reviewers. If they all have to travel to Washington, you know, where we, in 2008, we had, I think, 7 program assistants. Now we have 3. Okay, so it's just the pure volume of the work. We're getting much better at running those virtual panels so that the dynamics don't, you know, aren't as influential in the outcomes as they might have been when we first started doing it. But it is different, right? It is different. But now we have the, you know, we're using the See You, See Me technology more, so it's more like everybody's in the room together, and so the dynamics are not as bad. Charlie, you had a question?
You want to have not more than a certain, I mean, the point where you just don't need any more, even if they're all good.
If they're all good, you want all that you can get. But, you know, as I was sitting here listening to you guys talk, I realized we should have a relevance review panel manager on the next time we do this. Because, you know, I can remember, for one of the panels last year, there was one of the reviewers said, you know, I signed 6 of those letters last week. You know, so because we have the relevance review, you're actually, the people who are reviewing are being asked all the time to submit those letters. So they can tell the level of commitment of those people. So if it's on the company letterhead and, you know, it's been written by them, they actually took the time and made the effort. That's a whole completely different thing than, like, if it's a form letter and even if you have 6 different form letters, those reviewers are savvy, right? They're going to be able to, they'll know. But if you actually have 20 stakeholders, and every one of them is really invested in your project, then you want to have all 20.
Yeah. So I don't know if there's an overkill point as long as they're interesting.
We may stop looking at them.
Well, I think that you gloss over because you can tell them. No, the audience is more sophisticated now. Our stakeholder can understand that they don't want people. They don't think the one great people to get everything is the angry and potato guys. So they're setting their endorsements up in a knowledgeable way. So I think that's kind of the show a lot more.
Yeah.
Four letters didn't work. They kind of worked back in the early days. Any more?
Right. Yeah. So we had a question over here. No, we haven't figured that out yet. You know, remember I said that the relevance review is orchestrated chaos, and part of that is because we're making it up as we go along, you know, to be honest about it. You know, no one's ever done it before. And so it's better, and every year it gets better. But, and so even with the scientific merit review, we'll tell you what category you're in, but we don't tell you exactly where you ranked. You know, like, we'll say you ranked in high priority for funding and 20% of the applications were in that category. And so you don't really know where you were exactly. But we don't do that with the relevance review. We don't actually have different categories because there's no funding decisions being made. It's just yes, no. And then we ask them to rank them. But we don't send those back to you. That's a recommendation. Yeah. And let me just say real quickly that when the scientific merit panel is incorporating the results of the relevance review, remember we put all of the relevance review material as an appendix to the full application. So they see your stakeholder relevance statement. They see all your letters of recommendation. They see all the comments from the reviewers. And then they know, you know, where you ranked, if you were the most important or where you ranked. We do have that information. And I don't know, we could try to figure out how we could get that to you. But so they'll look and they say, well, okay, they had 20 letters of recommendation, but none of them were on letterhead. It was just, you know, it was a form letter. It got signed. So because they're doing the same thing, right? So it's important that that stakeholder relevance statement, as Sarah was saying, that's got to be, you got to knock that out of the park, just like for the scientific merit. Well, the page limit is only for the stakeholder relevance review. So if you're resubmitting, we don't put a limit on the response to the full proposal review. So you can go point by point and say, this is what I tell people to do is like you have a critical comment. You say, okay, we considered that, we've made some changes, here's the way we changed it, and you can find that on page 16, which means you have to have page numbers. So, you know, that you can actually do, you can tell them, you know, a real brief statement about how you address that concern and then point them to it where it is in the application. And then on the relevance review, if you got invited, most of those comments are relatively supportive. So a lot of times it's just like, yeah, we agree with them. We're the best thing since sliced bread. But if there have been some comments that were a little bit critical, you can say, well, yeah, we looked at that. We went back to our stakeholder advisory committee and we got their input. And here's how we're going to change that. Here's how we're going to address that problem. Which, and that goes back to what Jim was saying is you can't put an SCRI project together and from the time that the request for pre-applications is released until the deadline. You can't do that. What you need to do is start working with your stakeholders, form an advisory committee, get their input, then start putting your scientific team together to address that. And it's going to take you probably 18 months from the time you start until the time you're really ready for prime time.
When you write it again, it's basically you could say, I didn't do a very good job of explaining this. You know, when we went back to the stakeholders. And so we have addressed that, maybe make a statement or two right there, but then refer back to the body of the, it's okay to say, you know, we didn't explain that very well. Or if you just think the guy's out, lady's out in left field for a view, you can say, well, based upon this reference, and this reference is why we made that statement. You know, so don't just, it does come across quite as arrogant if you're using other people's work.
Just ignore it. You know, if there's something that's really critical that you don't agree with, you can just say, well, we looked at that, we considered it, we don't agree with that assessment, and here's why we don't agree with it.
And they're all free.
Yeah. It doesn't count against the page limit. And one thing, a number of the panel managers have suggested using figures. So we've actually increased the number of pages you can submit. So in the past it was 20 pages and that included figures and graphs. Now it's 20 pages and plus 2 pages for figures and graphs. So it's 22 pages total. And you don't have to just have all your figures and graphs at the end. You can incorporate them into the body of the proposal where they are appropriate and where they are going to have the best impact, make the most sense for the reviewers. Okay, we have time. Yes, sir. We won't hold that against you, though. That's all right.
Okay. The last
most recently, some of the reviewer comments are actually contrast with previous reviews. So, for example, early on we were told that the proposal was too broad, we needed to narrow it, we had too many crops, et cetera. And so we respected that and we did that. And then this past year, one of the synthesis comments was that we had narrowed it down. We had had too few crops in the proposal. And so when you have contrasting reviewers, especially from one year to the next, you know, you have, I understand, 5 pages to respond to the previous scientific proposal. Should we consider those 5 pages just for the last year, or should we consider responses to years 2, 3, and 4, for example?
Well, my take on that would be that, I had that happen to me. I was at the University of Florida for 10 years and at UMass for 5. And I submitted a lot of applications, and I actually had that happen. I submitted a biocontrol project 4 times, and the last time they told me to put it back exactly the way it was, the first time I submitted it. And so I stopped submitting to that program. I really tell the panels not to do that. So I didn't catch that. That's again one of our programmatic philosophies, is we don't like that happen. And so what you can do if you decide that you want to resubmit again is you can say, well, look, you know, in our first proposal, we had a really broad range of crops, and we were told by subsequent panels that we needed to focus that to make it, you know, to increase our chance of success. We agree with that. So we're not going to broaden out again. We're going to keep it the way it is. You don't have to change just because they said, you know, and I would say, and this is, you know, they might agree or disagree, we'll let them say, the difference, you know, like you're in high priority for funding, I said those projects should be funded, but we don't have enough money to do that. So the difference between getting funded and not getting funded can be razor thin. And so when the funding decisions are being discussed, the panel is looking for reasons not to fund your project. So that's where in the project summary or in the panel summary, when you get that back, you know, they're really looking for reasons that, you know, to differentiate, okay? Not to not fund it, but just to differentiate. Carrie.
Let's say you have some proposals landing in the high priority for funding category year after year. Could you request those reviewers from year one to, if not returning in year two, at least do a mail review of those to see if the proposers have indeed addressed the concerns or comments, because as you know, this is a tremendous amount of work year after year after year to do these things, both not just on the part of panelists, but also on the part of proposers. So I wonder if in this high priority for funding category, there might be some special considerations to go back to those prior reviewers to, at least by mail.
Well, you know, that's a great idea, and I'll give that some thought. But one of the reasons that they're probably not on the panel this year is because they don't have time to do it. So to go back to them and say, oh, well, we're not going to ask you to be on the panel, but would you take these 2 applications that you reviewed 2 years ago and review these 2? They're probably going to say, well, they, it's a time commitment issue, maybe. So what Megan is saying is that that if you let's say you submitted multiple years to actually include a summary of the changes that have been made over time. So rather than just responding to the current review, you're responding, you know, you're showing the panel what you've done over time to make the project better. And we did restrict the page limit for the response to the scientific review to 5 pages. That's something that we can go back and reconsider, just, you know, for something like this, that where we would, you know, maybe you get, if it's, you know, you get 3 pages per year or something, I don't know.
Have access to, you think they would do that? No. There's already too much to read. So if it's not in actually what they have to read, I mean, even then, if it's extraneous, they may or may not do it. Oh, crap, I had something that was actually insightful.
Yeah. All right. Anne-Marie? Okay. No, but he's being a smart ass.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Go ahead.
I'm Dwayne Ingram at the University of Kentucky.
Sarah White from Clemson University.
I'm Jim McPherson from Washington.
We have time for another question or two before we go to our next panel.
So if you're working with a crop that has a major industry stakeholder, maybe they have 70-90% of the value of the crop, and you're just proposing something in different states, and you've gone to them, they've sat on your conference calls, and then they say, we can't justify writing a letter because you're going to hurt our industry. Should that be addressed in the proposal, or should we stay away from those types of statements? Because it's kind of like something we've stayed away from. That, you know, they sat on our conference calls the last minute and they said, you know what, we're not really, we don't want this crop grown in other states. It's going to hurt our the competition. So I know in those situations where we want to kind of stay away from those statements and let the reviewers know about those sorts of things. Or...
That's your stakeholder community.
Oh, but there's, okay, like, so for example, you know, from California, so there's a major company that grows, you know, the lion's share of crops, you know, single company, and then you have a lot of state, we have a lot of stakeholders, smaller farmers, and in other states who wish to grow the crop, but they need help with production.
I would put that in.
Put it in.
I would frankly put it in, because the more information you give the reviewer as to why and you're like, why is this person included, that's a very pertinent piece of information, because the reviewer's more likely to say, well, I'm
But that would be in the stakeholder relevant statement.
Yes. Yeah. And perhaps have the stakeholders mention that in the
letter. Yeah. It has to be legitimate, not just because you need to get funded. If you're really working with your stakeholders and there are 25 whatever smaller operations, then you can make a convincing argument. They're citizens. They're important to their rural communities. You can write all of that stuff into it if it's legit. And it's not just grantsmanship. And it's a genuine commitment to the stakeholders who you will have an impact upon.
Sarah?
So to get back to Yoel's comments on the high priority, I do think that it would be very valuable for them to know where they rank in stakeholder relevance. Because if your consistency coming in at high, it may be because you're not the highest stakeholder relevance statement. And that may be why you've never made that transition to the outstanding, because of stakeholder relevance, you might have been fifth of the 5 proponents that were invited. And so knowing that would be very critical for you.
So I recall, at least last year, there was a numeric score. And it was it seemed like it was from 0 to 100 with a certain number of points. So if we got 95 points, we don't know if that's average, if that's...
Yeah.
So is there a way we can find out that information if we're...
So remember, we had 19 panels last year.
But if you had all those numbers, you could create the average.
Well, there's, you know, we have to think about it. It's not part of our system right now. And we have an 11-month process that we have to do in 12 months. So to add additional administrative tasks to that timeline may not be realistic because I do have other things that I have to do. So, but we'll think about it. I mean, and those are, I think those are valid concerns and those are things that, that, you know, we can change programmatically. We don't even have to put it in the RFA. We just change the way we do things. So we'll think about it. Charlie? The Center of Excellence, not really. That was part of the last Farm Bill was put in, that you could ask to be considered a Center of Excellence. And it's on a project by project basis. Okay. And if you are considered, then there's four criteria that you have to address to be considered a Center of Excellence. And if you address those and the panel agrees that yes, you meet the criteria to be considered a Center of Excellence. And then during the ranking of the applications, let's say so, but, and this happened one time, there were two projects that were in high priority for funding. And the panel could not differentiate between the two projects. They voted 100 times. They always came out even. And so somebody said, oh, is this a Center of Excellence? And they said, oh, yeah, it is. So what we say is that if you meet the criteria to be a Center of Excellence and you're tied with another project, we will give you priority. And so in that case, that project got ranked higher, and lo and behold, it was right above the funding line. So that's the only situation where it would have an impact on funding decisions. And remember, you have to use one of your 20 pages to justify those criteria. So some, you know, is it worth it or not? I don't know. Okay, so we're going to move on to our next panel. Thank you very much.